I remember when we first started this whole podcast thing, we just came up with the name God Journey. Some people didn't like it. I think it's perfect. This is not about me. This is not my journey. I am a supporting actor in a greater drama that's going on. This is about him.
Thinking outside the box isn't about whether you go to a meeting or not. It's about breaking free of the obligations of religious performance and living in the adventure of a relationship with God as our Father.
Two little guys talking about life, that's good tech.
Slinging freedom all over the place and making no apologies, this is The God Journey.
I'm Brad Cummings.
And I'm Wayne Jacobson.
The Saints win.
The Saints won. Yes, it was quite spectacular. If you were a Saints guy. Of course, I know lots of people from Indy. I don't think their weekend was so good. That's why a long time ago stopped putting my personal well-being in the hands of 22 overpriced athletes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I just don't. They win, it's fine. If they lose, who cares?
That's You're not emotionally invested in the outcome.
I used to be. Used to be a week's worth of depression.
Yeah? Yeah. Oh, really?
Oh, my gosh, yes.
You'd lay a whole week on the line.
I thought God would have abandoned me and everything. Why can't I'm out traveling, doing your work. Why can't you help my team win?
Well, I had a bunch of emails of people that, were convinced that God has spoken now that the Saints win.
No, seriously.
I'm serious.
No.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not even listening to that. That's trash. The Saints have won. God is coming back.
The horseshoe luck thing? No. It's purpose-driven. Saints win.
Oh, gosh. I hate when people do that in sports. I saw the current Christianity Today just blew through here, and I haven't read it yet, but the cover's talking about the cover story, something about how much Christians have embraced sports as their metaphor for life or whatever. And that sounds like it. People think, well, Saints win over the lucky horseshoe. That's just stupid talk. Of course, no one listening to this podcast would be thinking that way, one would hope.
I wouldn't be so sure.
Boy, these coasts are getting blasted.
Oh, yeah, dude, you need a shovel.
We were supposed to be there last weekend.
I know, three feet? Something or other?
Yeah, we ended up moving to the week before, and it's a good thing we did because we wouldn't have had a marriage seminar. We wouldn't have had nothing, but we got in the week before, and that was a fun weekend, actually. Spent a weekend with, maybe 1,000 or so Presbyterians in South.
You hung out with 1,000 Presbyterians?
It's hilarious.
Any pictures?
People think there was video. people think we're so anti-church and we're just horrible raving morons.
No, you're in church more than I am.
I live as the church. That's different. But
that's good.
Yeah, you're good.
Good. Well done.
We do visit traditional congregations now and then, and this was an interesting invite for me. I've not gotten many of these. A very large Presbyterian church that had read So You Don't Want to Go to Church Anymore and still wanted you to come. And
that's interesting.
Yeah, we did a marriage seminar, mostly off the He Loves Me book. Wanted to know how that works out in mine and Sarah's relationship. So putting Sarah on a stage with video and a full audience of people is
That's a new move for her.
It's not her deal. It's outside her comfort zone. And that, Sarah's not a presenter. You want Sarah to put some thoughts together on marriage and get up and talk about it? Yeah, not going to do it. But if you get her up stage and just start talking about some of the things and asking for her thoughts and opinions on things, my gosh, she stole the crowd. That's the main reason I don't travel with Sarah. Once I do, people never invite me back. Can you send Sarah? And they were asking Sarah, can you come and do a women's retreat for us? Sarah hates women's retreats, so she's not going. The shock of my weekend was sitting there the last bit on the marriage deal and the pastor up front saying, by the way, Wayne will be speaking tomorrow in all three of our Sunday services.
And you hadn't even planned on that.
Three? My goodness, that brings back bad memories. But
did you do the same sermon three times, or did you?
No.
I can't imagine that.
Actually, I'd already set it up with when I get asked to speak at a normal traditional thing, and I know they've read He Loves Me and So You Don't Want Church Anymore, I don't really know what it is that they want me to talk about that's what end of the pool they want me to swim in. I guess that's the way to say it. So I've taken to just saying to the guys like that, hey, if you want me to do that, happy to Sunday morning. Why don't we have a conversation? Why don't you sit down with me, just like a podcast, and you can ask me questions, and I can ask you some, and we can just work our way through a conversation about this journey, and then I'll know that you're pointing us toward things that will most help the people that we're part of here. Because I don't want to drop any bombs into people who are doing...
You're not lobbing holy hand grenades into the congregation trying to blow up their sacred cows?
So we had three very different conversations. He was asking me the same questions, but I wasn't giving him the same answers, which was... I mean, I was basically giving the same answer, but I was using a different way to get there, a different illustration, a different scripture, a different whatever.
So what did he end up focusing on? What, you know, having distilled both those books, engaged with them, wanted you there, what are they trying to sort out?
What it means to live loved and really feel like, how relational is this God? Is it more than just doing the rules and following the rituals that we've been given? And a real hunger to say, what does that relationship look like? I mean, does God speak to us? Do we get to know him personally? Or is this just, so some religious practices we've been left? So there's a hunger to live loved, a hunger to say, I want that to be more real than it is on the part of everybody there. And so those were the questions. The questions were around, how real is this relationship? What does it look like? What do we do to participate in this relationship? How does that affect our relationships with other people? So it was a fun conversation, all three of them. And he said afterwards, man, this was by far the most fun I've ever had. Never done this on a Sunday morning, have a conversation, loved it, loved how you answered things, loved the stuff you were talking about, loved that you could move from scripture to illustration to whatever and not look at any notes and not know what was coming next. And so it was really special. It was a special time. I felt really knit together with those folks. And
how cool.
I feel like they're on a neat journey. And who knows, we may go back and visit again sometime. That was cool. And folks who want to hear it, there's a link on my Lifestream blog that will take you to their website. You can hear one of those three conversations. They put one of them up, and people can listen to it and want to.
That's sweet.
So now I'm back and off to Kenya next.
Man.
Yeah.
Do you unpack your suitcase at all? Because you've been like here, there, and everywhere.
Well, I have two of everything.
Do you?
I do. So I only need to pull out the clothes and wash them and throw them back in pretty much. I mean, I've got all that pretty well streamlined, but toiletries and all the incidentals you need traveling, well, I have two of everything, so I don't have to unpack that and repack that. I mean, sometimes you have to refill the shampoo bottle if it's running out, but yeah, we're off to Kenya to meet these folks that we've been corresponding with over the last 3 or 4 years and have the God Journey. A number of the listeners here have sent in a bunch of money to help them through their crisis. And in fact, the last 2 years, we put about $50,000 through the God Journey and out to this group of folks. And love what I'm hearing about them. Love the email we've been getting. They really are trying to go on this relational journey, which is what they want me to come talk about when I'm there. So it'll be interesting
to see. That's hugely different for churches over there.
Oh, gosh. Everybody who's telling me that, why are you going over there? And this is very paternalistic, head guys.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the ministry, we did a bunch over in Uganda, and when you just look at the whole, the entrenchment of an institution and that sense of authority, it's like, wow.
Yeah, well, they want me to come and like do nightly rallies in 14 different places over 2 weeks. And I said, you know what, I'm really not thinking that's best use of my time or yours. I said, what I'd prefer to do is have 2 or 3 days in different places where we're actually spending time with people who want to get this journey, who want to process it, and who want to begin to help others learn how to live loved and learn to see the church differently, not as this event, but people who are learning to love and live loved. And they reshaped the whole thing to fit that. I don't know what we're getting into. This is one of those trips where I'm going to get on a plane and about 40 hours later land in Kenya somewhere. So it's a wild trip. Kent from the God Journey, we've had him on before, and he's been around for quite a few listeners. Well, know Kent from St. Louis. He's going with me. We're going to meet in Atlanta and catch our flight from there to Amsterdam, and then from there Nairobi.
Ooh, baby.
Yeah. So, I'm not looking forward to the trip part of this. I'm definitely looking forward to getting with the people that are there. But, Valentine's Day morning, I've got to catch an early flight out of L.A. to head to Atlanta to head to Nairobi. So. But they're folks that I'm really excited because I think just judging from the emails and things that they've been sent, not just the head guy I've been in contact with, the guy who kind of leads this denomination over there that involves Rwanda, Uganda. We're going to have people coming in from all over for these 3-day workshop kinds of things. But hearing from many of them who've read some of the stuff, they've been passing out my books and things around, and pastors are even saying, wow, we don't even know what this is, and yet we're interested, we're engaged. So
that's cool.
Yeah. So we'll see.
See where that goes. I saw the most amazing movie I've ever seen.
Oh boy, Avatar. Now no. we're having
no,
this
no,
conversation.
No, not this one.
Okay, back up.
I got a new top pick.
You saw Titanic on rerun?
No. Okay. It's not in theaters. It was a screening.
Wait for it.
What do you mean?
I'm waiting for it.
It's called The Human Experience. The Human Experience. It's a documentary done by some guys out of Brooklyn, New York. I mean, total grassroots films. You know how BBC did the whole thing Planet Earth?
Yeah.
So those were stunning.
They were stunning.
You end up going like, oh my gosh, we live on that planet? Wow. I mean, yeah. It's like, God, that's amazing.
Splendor
what you
was incredible, and so was the really mean, ugly parts of creation.
Yeah,
parts of creation.
Yeah, uh-huh. The animal kingdom.
Torturing.
And then Disney's doing Oceans. And uh-huh. I've seen the trailers for that, and it's like stunning. It's amazing.
Sounds wet.
Okay. These guys have done something on that scale in terms of displaying what it is to be a human being. And it doesn't have an ounce of religion in it, but God seems pregnant throughout.
God's pregnant.
I'm serious.
He's pregnant with
God. This thing was so fantastic.
How much of it did you see?
It was a 90-minute documentary. Pepperdine was doing their first ever film festival, and this was the sort of the premier, you know, showcase for the night. Had no idea what it was going to be, so didn't have any expectations. At the end of it, the entire crowd of people sat through all of the credits in silence. All you could hear was people weeping.
Is there more than just the 90 minutes, or is that the whole thing?
It's 90 minutes. It's a story of two brothers that grew up in this sort of boys' home in Brooklyn, New York, were sort of taken in by this guy, and they just want to figure out what does it mean to be a human being. And so they go and they live as homeless guys for the first 7 days of this in Brooklyn, New York, when it's like 5 degrees out, and they have interactions with homeless people, and some of the it's not scripted, but what they captured, the essence of it, was extraordinary as far as a look into the lives of people. They went on a surf trip to the Lost Boys of Lima, Peru, and they go down and you saw just these kids that are just, I mean, all kinds of deformities, lives that we would look at and go like, oh, I would never want to live that life. And you see the joy of relating that comes out of these little kids and the love of the people caring for them. They go into a leper colony in Ghana. And, I mean, some of the most horrible, grotesque things. And you look at the joy in these people of being in community with each other. I felt like I got saved again at the end of this.
Wow.
I was absolutely weeping. And it's the first time I've ever wanted to jump on my feet and just clap and scream and yell bravo. And I thought what was so amazing about it is they depicted lives that you and I would probably, if we'd say, hey, you have to suffer through this, we would go, that's not worth living. And then they actually talk to these people, and you see this incredible, precious gift of being alive and loving someone else. And the relationship that they had towards God and the appreciation of just, you just sat there going like, okay, I'm just happy I'm breathing. It just did an absolute leg sweep on most everyone's capacity to look at life. And I just sat there going like, Lord, that's extraordinary.
Hmm.
This thing, life, that you've given to us, and the chance to look at an unscripted message, because they just sort of felt like they didn't have an agenda. They were going out, four young, you know, the college-age guys went on this journey, and what they came back was, I think, something so profound. And we had a chance to talk with them afterwards, and I just sat there going like, I mean, it was spellbinding. And
is this going to be in theaters, or?
I'm going to try to help make it happen. I mean, I can't believe someone has snagged it up. I ended up talking to the head guy.
Oh, you're going to snag it up. Way to go.
I'm going to try to help him.
There you go.
It's just, I was so amazed at what they put together and the impact. I mean, Jared, 2 days later, we come back after this little film festival. 2 days later, Jared looks at me, he's like, Dad, what happened? He says, you're different. And I was kind of like, well, Jared, I think it's really the impact on watching that film. Something's changed on the inside where I just have a much different perspective. I'm just happy to be here. the sense of frustration of, oh, this isn't working or that's not, it's just like, you know what? There is the simplicity of just experiencing life, this human experience, whatever it is, with a sense of appreciation of the gift of being.
Cool.
And I got to tell you, that just, you know, when I look at Jesus's, you know, first 30 years, and we have scant little written about it in the Gospels, and you just go like, you know, God chose to see fit to spend that much time just living life. Not with some big crusade agenda, but just living and loving. And so we have this whole sense of, you know, the people's fascination with living loved. I just kind of feel like it's draining the agenda out of Christianity in a glorious way, because it's bringing it back to a sense of, you know what? This really is all about relationship. Yeah, I want other people to know about this, but probably the most profound way is to allow them to encounter it genuinely without the missional agenda of, I got something to sell you.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think one of the things I listen to you talk about, the human experience, one of the things I notice when I travel overseas, our whole sense of wealth and prosperity, our whole sense as a culture, what you need to be happy, you know, an iPod and an iPhone and a, you know, HD TV and a great place to live. And you travel overseas and people talk about, how do people live over there and don't have any of these things? And the answer to it is they're often far happier and far more healthy relationally without the distractions of all that. I'm watching little kids, some of which have AIDS and are dying, playing in a township outside Durban, South Africa. And you watch these kids play with a ball or a stick and laugh, belly laugh, enjoy each other, enjoy the day. And you really go, you know what, it isn't as Jesus said, you think we'd remember such things or take them seriously. It's not what a man has at all that determines what joy is and what life is. And we sure get confused with that, living in the world we do.
And the richness of celebrating just the simple moments of life. I mean, I found myself just going like, you know, our lives can just cascade with this unrelenting demand. And I'm just going like, enough already.
Yeah.
And yet just a couple of moments to kind of sit and just stare at one of my kids and just appreciate them. Just going like, you know what? I don't need anything. I mean, Taylor looked at me like, what? And I'm just going, you know what, honey? I am just excited to be your dad.
Thinks you're strange. Right?
Yeah, I'm sure she does.
Where does
Mom,
dad come
what's
from?
What's wrong with dad? But I don't know. I've been being brought back to that place of just a simple appreciation of, you know, God is. He does exist, and He is in our lives. And I don't feel a need to have to do something.
Yeah. When you were mentioning that, because we talked about this a little last week, about Jesus' 30 years of life not necessarily doing anything. And yet here at 12, He's in the temple with a real sense of His Father's business.
Absolutely.
See, he didn't really catch that on until he was 30. Then he really got about His Father's business. He understood it at 12.
Yeah.
He may have understood it before 12.
And he was doing it.
And whatever he did between 12 and 30 was part of His Father's business. Just being a kid, growing up in Nazareth. Helping in his dad's carpentry, I guess. I don't know. Becoming a carpenter himself. We don't know. I wish we'd had more of those details, except by those spurious gospels that aren't gospels at all, where he's healing birds and making clay chickens and all kinds of things, but and then breathing into them. But because that really is where life is lived. 90% of our lives is just lived in the real stuff of life.
Yeah, and I look at the fact that, okay, here's God, very God, deciding to not just enter as an avatar. Okay, I'm just going to come as a full-fledged man. I'm just going to appear. Ta-da! I am the king
of the world. Yes.
I mean, if I was God, I'm not really sure I'd start there. That really is bizarre to me. That you'd start as a baby, absolutely, utterly dependent on someone else's care for you. You're God, very God.
Yeah.
Part of the reason why I think all this is true Because you can't make that stuff up. You know, no human being would say, I know what I'm going to do.
Yeah, I got this.
Nobody would have started there.
Which made it more difficult, didn't it? Because it's like, oh, this is Jesus, man. We saw him as a baby. We saw him playing in the streets of Nazareth. He can't be any big deal.
And think of the profundity of here's a little boy growing up coming to an awareness, the human Jesus coming to an awareness that he is, in fact, God, very God, and is not delusional, and hasn't become some egotistical megalomaniac declaring what everyone else should do. I mean, he's going, I find that extraordinary.
Yeah.
He's 12. Yeah. He's mystifying the rabbis in the temple. They don't know what in the world to think of this 12-year-old expounding the truths of God and his kingdom. And then nothing else. You don't hear anything else. Went back to normal life, didn't leave normal life as if it was something to leave.
Yeah.
And I look at the incredible validity of, we don't place value on that. What I saw in that movie, you know, when they started interviewing the lepers, it's like, I mean, I bumped into, you know, lepers and stuff like that when we were in India. And it was just like, oh my gosh, nothing ever in life prepared me for that. And the revulsion. And the awareness of why they live off of, you're just going like, just even the smell, you're just going like, I don't have adequate words. You're just going like, oh my gosh. And you look at these guys and what do they do for the day? They don't have jobs. They don't have any economy. They're just trying to survive. But the life that was in this one particular man's life, when he's talking about just the joy of having these four young guys from New York and then sitting in the jungle in Ghana, and the physical touch.
Yeah.
And I started to just cry, going like,
wow.
We don't understand life anymore.
Yeah. And even when you go back to ministry or mission, you get back to, isn't that how Jesus' life unfolded even as he got past 30? You don't have the sense from reading any of the Gospels that Jesus had this orchestrated strategy to do anything.
Here's my plan.
He just watched the day unfold. And the encounters that he had were more serendipitous encounters than they were orchestrated. Let's plan a rally in Samaria and get some flyers up and get a band to lead.
Let's get it going.
Yeah, let's get something going here so we can. He was just walking through life and ends up with Zacchaeus in one town. Ends up, you know, he just, life unfolded with him. And I think what you said about, you know, not being a megalomaniac or not. I was thinking about this phrase the other day because someone asked me this morning. Actually, I was thinking about this morning because someone was asking me about a workshop thing they want to teach and wanted to know if I had any thoughts about it. It maybe all our missional stuff comes from our sense of insecurity. Maybe the whole agenda thing that we do with our lives, because how many times did it say of Jesus, he knew where he'd come from and he knew where he was going. So he didn't seem to be bothered in the moment. None of the moments bothered him. Even if people were lying about him, even if people were opposing him, even if people were plotting his murder, even if people were trying to crown him king and drag him into the temple and do stuff, he was just, he knew where he came from and he knew where he was going. And that made him, let him live the day without any need to drive an agenda of some kind, which I think is fascinating.
Yeah, and it's not as if he wasn't about his father's business. It's not as if he didn't have an awareness of communicating the power of this kingdom being right at hand.
Yep.
And so it's like, you know, it's like, because I imagine people are listening going like, well, what do you mean there's no mission? I mean, Christianity without the agenda of the mission?
Living loved and loving people around you. Would that not spill over into
the mission?
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, it is the mission.
Yeah.
And when I think of the fact that, you know, here's Jesus in the Holy of Holies of the Gospel of John saying, you know what, guys, if you would just love each other, the whole world's going to know this is real.
Yep.
And the simplicity of that. We had a chance to, you know, someone regathered our college young adults ministry. It's sort of like they had a 10-year reunion. And they wanted to just sort of regather. And I said, like, it's been 10 years?
Wow.
I was kind of like shocked. Well, like, well, yeah. It's been a lot longer than just 10 years, but you know, it's like, well, that was the group that won. And it was so fun to actually regather where these people had lived life together. I mean, it was a group that had taken, you know, to Scotland, to Germany, I mean, to different places where a lot of life had been logged living and enjoying and loving each other. And the bonds, after 10 years, most of these people have not seen each other.
Yeah.
You know? They're all a lot plumper.
We do eat well.
You know? And you're just going like, it was so wild to enjoy just the fact that there's a bond that remained that was incredibly special.
Isn't that fun? Yep.
That you just celebrate going like, you know what? The reason it was so powerful in those times, because I think they were all kind of like, gosh, you know, the good old days, the glory. I mean, God did amazing things in our midst. But I think the real reason was because of that cultivated atmosphere of it wasn't trying to be amazing.
Yeah.
We were absolutely in love with God and kind of in love with each other. We just were having a blast.
Yeah.
And other people had a chance to see that and were captured with that being real. And I'm just going like, gosh, when you add agenda to that, that's when it becomes something less than that feels like, what am I going to be asked to do or buy at the end of this?
This is what Darlene wrote in an email to us. It fits right in with what you're saying. I love this. She wrote, this is Darlene from New Zealand. Coffee breaks, cab rides, green rooms. Real growth often happens outside of where we intend it to. Talked about one guy. One man organized a science and art conference with all the infrastructure of a conference. The parties, chats, lunches, airport arrivals with no actual conference. Apparently, it was hugely successful and spawned many ongoing collaborations. I looked it up, and here's what the organizer himself said. We decided a few hours before the event was supposed to take place to cancel the conference, to just do a non-conference. It had all the ingredients of a conference, badges, T-shirts, bags with all the speakers, CVs, a hotel where all the people could stay, a bus to pick them up in the morning and bring them to the Science Center, people at the airport picking the guests up, all the logistics. But the conference was no longer there. It was just a coffee break. And people loved it.
Is that amazing?
No way.
If we do a God Journey conference, that's what's
shirts
looking.
Like that. That's awesome. That would be great. Have a time to start and then don't do nothing.
We're not doing any meetings. You know, what does everybody enjoy about retreats and conferences? Isn't it hanging out with people?
It's what happens before and after.
We have to go sit down for the meeting now, so let's go get to the meeting so we can get back to having a good time. Yapping up with friends. I love what she said. Real growth often happens outside of where we intend it to. That whole mindset we have, this intentionally strategizing for an outcome, it must be hilarious to God. God goes, the real stuff you don't plot out and you don't plan and you don't make happen. Real stuff unfolds as life unfolds.
If this whole thing, which I do believe is sort of voluntary participation in the kingdom... Last time I checked, God didn't force anyone in.
Not lightly. Nope.
And it's sort of like, if this really is the genuine response of the human heart to God, very God, or just another human heart, you can't fabricate that. You can't make that happen. And when you manipulate it, you don't get the very thing that you are hoping. You get the manipulation.
Yeah. And you might get some personal gain you're trying to get out of that manipulation. But you're doing it at the expense of the real thing going on, which is the relationships with people that can be, like you say, lifelong. Even if you don't see people for 10 years. I had the best time Sarah have at this point in our life, Sarah and I, is we get together with people that we knew 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 different seasons of our lives.
And you haven't stopped knowing them.
You haven't stopped it. And here's what's key. No betrayal has busted up the relationship because I also have damaged relationships, you know, where people.
Yeah, for you, totally.
Yeah, was good, was great, God was in the midst, and then somebody had to own it for themselves. Somebody had to put their hand on God's gift and say, mine.
Uh-huh.
And lie and cheat and steal, whatever. I've had that up a couple times in my life. It's been incredibly painful. And it really, then you get together 10 years later and it's not fun. I'm not even looking forward to it. We're doing a lot with him? I don't think so. I'm busy that weekend. I'm going to Kenya. Wasn't planning to go to Kenya, but I'm going to Kenya now. And just because we let something else become more important than the relationship. And when you do that, then
it's over.
Then, like you said, you get your manipulation. You get your junk.
You can have what you want.
Yeah. And it's just sad. Gosh, so sad. See,
but I think when... I don't know. I mean, I look at, you know, in John 13 to 17 and so much of what Jesus is talking about, it's like, you know, that's his sort of last delving into what matters.
Yeah.
With the group that he had for 3 years, been living and loving and just relating with.
Yeah.
And they didn't seem to have their sense of, well, you know, we did the tour of Jerusalem. We did, you know, it's like they're just, he's gathering, he's loving them, and he's reducing all of this down to the simplicity factor of what is profound, where it's like, just love each other. If the world can know that you and I are one, that, you know, I mean, it's like he's putting the building blocks of saying, if this is real, if this is genuine, you won't have to make it happen or make it work.
Don't we miss that, though, just even by the way scholars interpret the life of Jesus?
Yeah.
You know, here's the Nazareth phase, moving over to the Galilean staging to the final ascent on Jerusalem. We interpret all these stuff with a scholarly garbage.
Yes.
Yeah. And yes. So someone asked me that when I was in Pennsylvania. Said, why is everything about Christianity so intellectual? Because the intellectuals...
It's totally garbage.
No, the intellectuals took control of the seminaries, and the people who survived seminaries are intellectuals, and so the people who are teaching everything having to do with Christianity are intellectuals that trust the intellect more than they trust the life of the Spirit and more than they live stuff that unfolds like this. So no wonder when the religion starts thinking...
It's a head case.
It's all about strategy and manipulation and how do we get to the desired outcome we want and how do we stage to that, and we've even reinterpreted the Gospels in that little grid.
As if that's what Jesus was doing.
Which is a fake grid.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't believe in any of the scholarly crap. He was always excited when this wasn't being given out to the wise and the intelligent. But the infants and babes who were just experiencing a reality that went beyond their intellect. Instead of trying the intellect to own everything and try and compartmentalize Jesus' life into these various strategic moments, when we're all just reading that into a life that unfolded in the glory of God, a guy who knew where he came from and knew where he was going and could just live in the moment with great joy and freedom and life.
Yeah.
And we're so pursuing other things. It's exhausting. I like this. This letter from Janine in Northern Ireland. I like this. It's a movie thing, so you'll like it too. For me, I feel like poor Marty, the zebra in the kids' movie Madagascar. He's been looking for years at the same painted mural of the wild on the brick wall in his zoo cage while running on a treadmill that is supposed to stimulate galloping free across the African plains. Yet deep down, he knows he's being shortchanged and yearns for the real thing. Finally, he makes a break for it, and it costs him. But when he sees the same mural picture in all its wild splendor for real, it takes his breath away, and he can't help but kick up his heels and to run the way he was created to.
Yeah.
Isn't that great?
That's awesome.
That's a great description of religion.
Yeah.
We slapped the mural on the wall and put a treadmill in front of it and said, that's the reality. You were born
You're living
this.
The life now.
You were born for this. And then when you actually, you know, and poor Marty had a rough ride getting over to Madagascar. But when he finally gets there and he sees the same scene, only it's not paint on brick. It's an actual tree and a plane and a wild. Man, that's the joy of, I think, moving away from our religious manipulations to getting into a life.
Yeah, and I mean, as someone who has been on the forefront of all the cutting edge efforts.
Hey, I painted some of those murals. I get that.
I know. I sit there and it's like, I don't know, this has been like a month or two of just being able to kind of, stop and ponder. Of just going like, for real, God, I mean, you know, we've taken quite a journey. I'm not at some like midlife crisis. I'm just kind of like,
good.
This is interesting, Lord. I've tried really hard doing a lot of different things. I find myself more satisfied now, but without the clarity of here's the agenda. You just go like, I don't have one. There's some things I'd love to see and do, but it's more just those are the things that I'm passionate about. That's what my heart's beating for right now. Yeah. And it's like, maybe it's that.
When I look at my life the last little while and see, gosh, last 15, 20 years, the things I'm most excited about that I'm involved in now unfolded. They weren't strategic decisions to go from A to B to make this happen or that happen. It was just life unfolded. There was an opportunity. Somebody passed my way. There was a conversation. That conversation blossomed into something we didn't foresee coming this direction. Or, you know, someone gave me something that was important to them, and I got to be important to me as well. And I look back and go, you know, in the maybe the first 15, 20 years, maybe all that was happening too, and I just missed it. You know, I'm so... Look at those guys that were going around the poor Samaritan guy that had been
busy doing the kingdom business. I missed the king.
the guy that got beat up on the road, and the Levi and the priest, they go right by him. Why?
Because I had things to do.
They got to discipleship school. I got time to help somebody that's been beat up on the road. And isn't it really those acts of serving and the opportunities, and life really unfolds when you're walking alongside God? You can let life unfold that way. And in the insecurity of not, it seems like you've got to plot and plan everything to somehow make it feel
you
like
make
your
it
life's
happen.
Worth living.
Yeah, and because if you can't produce the fruit, then, gosh, then what? And it's like, you know what? I heard a joke a while back. You know, someone 20 years ago talked about, you know, walking out through the orange vineyards of just going like, you know, I listen to
orange
the trees.
Orange vineyards? Orange groves.
Orange groves.
There we go.
There you go.
Okay,
he
sorry,
says,
farm
with
me.
Thank you for the correction. He's talking about, you know, I listen to the groaning at night of those trees trying so hard to produce that fruit. I said, he was such a good speaker. Everyone was like, yeah?
Yeah. What?
They didn't.
I've never heard him groan.
They don't grow.
I
sat there going like, it was so hilarious because he was pointing out the fact that, you know what, fruit happens because life is in the tree. That whole vine branch union of our, we're supposed to be grafted into his life, not trying busy to produce it outside of him.
And I think our insecurity, I look at more trash I've done in my life was motivated more by Wayne's insecurity.
Sure.
I've got to do something to make it look like I'm doing something. It really was. I remember classes I planned because just, you know, we're not busy here and they have more stuff going on and you plan stuff so people have stuff to go to. And I look back at so many of the things I used to do in that whole religious dynamic of trying to be missional and earn something great for God. And now I look back and go, wow, all that stuff was not fruitful. It was all the groaning of the vine to produce something. And going back to that Jesus' thing again, when you know where you've come from and where you're going, you can let life unfold.
Yeah, you can exhale and relax a little bit.
Yeah.
That whole strive so as to enter into the rest of God. You know what? It takes God to do God things. And if you're not God, give it up.
And he and he just asked us to walk with. He didn't say, go do something for me to show me that you're good. He never said that kind of stuff. That's the stuff we got.
Yeah, in fact, he said, there's no one good.
I've enjoyed Charlene.
There's just one.
Yeah, Charlene's note to us, I thought was really good. It's continually amazing to me how everything I once thought freeing has now become restrictive. And my places of comfortable establishment in the past now feel stifling. And I'm rarely comfortable there anymore. Thank you for helping me breathe deeply the fragrance and freedom of Father as I continue to figure out what all this means for my own unique journey. Well, good for you, Charlene.
That's cool.
That is really wonderful. Because that's where freedom really happens, to realize, gosh, all this passion that religion manipulated, now you look back and see it for the bondage it is. It's, you know, pretending to run in front of the mural. It's all that hard work to do something for God that never satisfies and never fulfills.
Or it could be the simple fact that, guess what, for this lady, the shepherds moved her to a different place. Now, I realize at times I don't need to, as God moves me from one place to another, that doesn't become a commentary of the wrong place that I was. No, he led me there too. I mean, I look at the whole journey of what I've been in. I'd have to say, sincerely, I believed I was following him the whole time.
Okay.
I don't think that means that everything that was executed was, oh, okay, that's exactly what... But I just realized God moves me, and that doesn't mean it necessarily has to be a commentary on the rest of the crowd or how wrong those people are that are camped there.
I agree that that's true, but some of it was a pig pen. Now, be honest. Some of it was we were slopping hog and going, okay, this may be getting me home to where I need to go, but you know what? It's not like God wanted me to be here. That's not always true.
No, no. I'm just saying that it's not either or.
No, I get you.
And how I think so oftentimes the security of what she just described isn't a commentary on somebody else. It's just she knows that's not where she's supposed to be.
Yeah, I hear you. Bill from Georgia writes this, and he knew this is where he wasn't supposed to be either. In my personal journey, I've gone through a church split, was used by a mentor and a friend in a power play to take over the remaining church without my knowledge, and walked away feeling betrayed and my reputation damaged.
Ouch.
To boil down a long story, my church experience made me feel a relationship with God was not obtainable to me, and I had been manipulated and hurt more than I had ever been outside the church. I tried to get back into church, but lost all desire to continue. I also was losing my desire to seek God, but God didn't leave me there. He has revealed a lot of truth to me through these tough experiences. Your podcast with Brad and your teachings have been a real encouragement. Thank you for them. I'm learning to love others no matter what is going on as I learn that I'm loved by Father.
That's sweet.
Cool stuff. Journey's painful sometimes, but the whole deal we joke about between being painfully disillusioned and gratefully disillusioned. We have some other emails we'll maybe cover up on a show up the road, but
just live loved and love others. It's simple.
And let life unfold. And then you'll find yourself smack dab in the middle of what God has for you. Thank you for joining us today on The God Journey. If you'd like to participate in the conversation, you may do so at our website, thegodjourney.com.